Hey, Josh.
Hey Nate, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. Life is good. Yeah, we have like a teeny tiny bit of snow here this morning, which makes everybody happy. And yeah, life's good. How are you?
I'm good too. We did get a little snow enough to delay us, but had to do the dog walk in a rush and dry him off afterwards so he's not a sopping mess all over the place. But yeah, things are pretty solid over here too.
Nice. Well, we have a special episode today, so would you like to get us into
Yeah, we have a guest today. So we're super excited to have Chris Savage, the CEO and co-founder of Wistia. Chris has been in the SaaS game since 2006, so probably to the same point of when I used to not even know it was called SaaS. So I think he's kind of an OG, at least in my mind, from a B2B SaaS before it was called that. But Chris, welcome to the show, and hope I got most of that right.
You got it right. Yes, I'm definitely an OG, and I've been in the game for a while. And it was funny when we started. It was like, I mean, I remember our first. We signed up and used S3 for the first time, and our first bill was like 15 cents. And I think that was like maybe 6 months before our first bill would have had to be like, if we were using another hosting and service provider, would have been like $200 a month, and we honestly couldn't have afforded it. So it was like we were like right there on the cusp of like this like class of company that couldn't exist without the new infrastructure that was like starting to be built.
Oh wow. Yeah, I didn't even really think about that because like my first SaaS, we actually had a server, and because we weren't super storage intensive, it was like dedicated server type of game then for me. But cool. We have a lot of topics we'd like to discuss and cover. And as we talked about, Chris has seen many cycles, but first we want to kind of dive into how Chris sees the business video market, because that's what Wistia does. So yeah, with that, I wanted to kind of start about like who are Wistia's core customers? Are they tech? Are they SMB? Like where how do you see your customer set?
Yeah, it's really SMB. I like to think of this as like concentric circles on a dartboard, and like who is your first round like primo target customer, and then who is your secondary, tertiary, on and on. And so for us, it's SMB, really like mid-sized, is gonna be right center of the bullseye. It cuts across industry. I mean, there's been many times we have tried to just have it be one industry, and that seems like it would be easier. Although I don't know if that's just a grass is always greener situation, but yeah, and it's been that way for a very long time. Like, it was funny, one of the first insights we had was, when we started the company in 2006, we were focused on filmmakers, and we were going to make a filmmaking competition website. That was our plan. Like, we believed that online video was going to change dramatically. It's going to get much easier, and we thought that would happen very fast. We thought that would happen like, in a couple of years. We're very wrong about that. It took way longer than we thought. But because we thought it was going to happen so fast, we said we have to find a group to focus on. We're going to focus on filmmakers. I have a background in film. We'll make a competition website where big brands host competitions, and then filmmakers compete to make ads for them or trailers or stuff like that. And it'll be like user combining user gen organic stuff with like, monetization, blah, 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 blah. And that was not going to work. That became clear very rapidly. Like, we were not going to make this two-party market. Like, it wasn't going to happen. We built all this video tech, and we'd go to these meetups, and everyone would just knew us, quote, as like the video guys. And so they would ask us about, they wanted to add video in their product, or they were trying to use video on their site, or which video tools should they use, or whatever. And it took us about a year to actually listen. And realize, wait, we could help these folks who want to use video, but video isn't their core competency. And then we got our first customers. Like, our first customer bought the most minimal version. I mean, it was still Wistia, but it was like at that time, it was just private secure video sharing. Our first customer signed up. They were so excited. We actually got them to agree to what we would build for them. We built it in 2 weeks on top of the tech that we had, and they were willing to spend $400 a month. And we
Sweet.
remember thinking at the time, like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, our total expenses for me and my co-founder, Brendan, were $1,600 a month because we lived in a 10-person house We shared all our food with all our roommates. Like, it was like, that's why when I talk about the cost of the servers before, it was like 200 was a lot. So like 15 cents was better. So we got that first customer and they were so, we couldn't believe how much value they saw in someone who was an expert solving the problem for them, like the non-expert. And actually, it took me a long time to realize they actually thought $400 a month was really cheap. Right. Even so, it worked out. And it, but at that, like, that thing continued and was clearly true. And so as we started work, like, that's something that's always been a focus, is like, okay, if we can help the people who are not necessarily the video expert themselves use video better, that's a big market that's going to value this, you know, what the tech, and value the time saving and value the enabling and all that kind of stuff. And that really has held true for a very, very long time.
Wow. That's a great, yeah, there's some quick lessons you got there. But that's great that you made those adjustments. I know I've taken a long time to listen to customers for certain things too. And I think Nate has as well. One of the things you mentioned was, you know, targeting focus industries, because you basically said you're pretty much horizontal, right, across industries. But how have you not gotten caught up in sort of the tech side, right? Like, the, I feel like LinkedIn and Twitter and all these places where we all hang out, you know, tech has an oversized or voice. It's like the loud minority, I would think. At least my perspective is that now. Yeah. Before it wasn't. It just, it's hard to see that. But have you gotten caught up in that in times through the Wistia journey and whatnot?
You mean like at other with tech like companies? Customer? You mean like with customer feedback and stuff, or like trying to figure out how to parse the right feedback, or like trying to, is that what you mean?
Sorry. No. I meant more of like as customers, like targeting tech companies more specifically.
Got it.
Like,
yeah, I mean, bigger, we have
the bigger fun stuff.
Got it. We have tons of tech companies as customers, tons and tons. And it's not that we don't focus on them. A lot of their needs are very similar to other needs. I mean, I just think it is, you know, there is, when you talk about the loud minority, I think about the group who are like, I will do it myself, I don't want to pay for software group.
Right. Right.
And we've definitely heard that since the beginning. And I think a lot of those people have a challenge empathizing with people who don't have the same technical skill that they do, right? And so they don't see how big some of these opportunities actually are, because they're blinded by their own like engineering skill. And so it is like, I think very important thing, I think, to like, you know, when you're looking at who your target customer is and how you can help them, getting the data on what they want in a lot of different ways. And so that's kind of been our remedy to that. So we can have tons of tech companies as customers. We have financial services. We have manufacturing. We have yoga studios. It's so many different things. We've tried to focus more on like what size company should start. So we're not focused on like the solopreneur, for example. There are solopreneurs who use Wistia for sure. But that's not like the core focus. It's not just numbers. Like, we focused on companies that are slightly bigger. And the reason for that is that we know if you have a marketing budget and you have enough complexity in what you're trying to do with video, that we can dramatically help you. We can make it much simpler and easier, and you value your time because you have some stuff working. That's where it's going to be like a really good fit for us, right? But the feedback and how you get the feedback getting to that place, I think, is really important. And the thing that I think is the easiest to miss is like that in-person or qualitative feedback of actually talking to a customer. And that's where I always find you actually get a sense of like where the market's at. And so that was true at the beginning at those meetups, as I was kind of talking about, like, it was people in person telling us like, we wanted this thing, or this was my understanding of the space. And I find it still to be true. I still do events now, and I'll go and just ask people how they're doing things. And I'm very surprised often that like what I see online is not what I see in person, you know?
Right.
And I think getting across that gulf and understanding and getting like a broad enough array of feedback is really important when you're actually making the big decisions about where should you focus and who should your target be and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, great. No, that's super helpful. How has that changed over time now that, you know, we basically called you an OG and you've been in this for coming up on 20 years, right? So how has that changed in terms of, you know, you've got people in the quote unquote digital transformation, especially with SMBs and types of businesses. And then obviously you've had COVID. Like, how do you think about how this video market has matured and where are you on that spectrum of like adoption?
So I thought we were early in 2006 because that's when we started. And I think we all anchor to like when we start things and do things, but the market doesn't care. The market doesn't give a shit when you start. So I, to play that out another way, in 2019, I thought the market was late stage. That was my impression, was like, okay, when we look at what our customers and they're asking us for, they want more advanced analytics and they want more advanced integrations. And it just really felt like the market was really stable. And then what COVID did, and this had happened before to our space, actually, I should say, like, the other way to look at our market is as the cost of producing videos has dropped, as like, first it was like DSLRs added video, and then it was like the iPhone video actually got good and mobile video got good. That just grew our market dramatically, right? Because that was like the limiting factor. So that had all happened and it felt like, okay, we're through those big changes. Is video really going to get that much cheaper, that much easier? People's expectations really going to change that much? It didn't really seem like that. We also had a video creation product we launched in 2016 called Soapbox. And so I have like, I'm watching the data on that and it's like slow and steady, basically. Well, 2020 happens. Everyone's remote. Everyone's at home. We see unbelievable growth in numbers of videos added, signups, every number you could, amount of time watching, not surprising. And then, you know, we saw the correction to that, like things open up, people go back, some people go back to the office, people change expectations, still very heightened growth from what we've seen before. But there was a change, I think, that happened in there that really changed the market in a big way, which was people saw their computer as a camera. And I mean, even right now, right? Like, we're doing a video podcast. I assume you're going to release clips, some of the clips of this. This was not like a given in 2019 that you could do this and we could all be at home. Like, it was very, the expectations were your background needs to look really good. You need to spend a lot of time. It probably, you'd be in an office. Like, when I did a podcast before COVID, it was interviewing people in person. That was kind of the default state. And we switched a lot of defaults and we changed a lot of expectations. And so what that meant for Wistia actually was that our customers started asking us for very different things than they had asked us for before. And it started in late 2020 and then it continued in 2021 and it's continued into 2022, 2023, 2024. And everything they've asked us for has been, you know, we had historically been this like video platform focused on hosting and analytics, but they're asking us for more creation tools and editing tools and live broadcasting tools. And they want it all in the browser and they want it all seamless and easy and they want it one place. And what it made me realize was that even though my perception was that the market was mature, this change is actually far bigger than the previous changes for like B2B video. And the scale is just so different than it has been because like, everyone's expectations on what is appropriate to be on camera change, like societally, right? Like, right. It's not weird. I don't watch the news, live news that much, but every once in a while you turn it on and you'll see a remote guest in their home on TV as in giving an expert opinion. There's like one time that happened before and the guy's kid came in the back door and like, you know what I mean? Like, that was remarkable in that one moment. And it's just no longer remarkable. And so what it meant is that like the cost and the cultural change has actually made me feel that the market is now early stage. And it's a very bizarre feeling because I never would have thought that 17 years into building this business that our market would be early stage, but it feels early stage. Like, the innovation that's happening, the speed of change, what customers are asking for, the broadness in terms of what people are asking for, it's wild. And I mean, we've been through more change at Wistia in the last 2 years than we went through in the previous 15, easily. Turns out I like early stage things. So I'm extremely energized by it, as you can tell.
Right.
But yeah, it was one of those things, this lesson of like, just because I've been doing this for a long time, the market doesn't care at all. the market is just wants what it wants. And if way more people want this, and it needs to be easier, and it needs to be cheaper, and it needs to be faster, and you need to build better quality things, and AI is going to let you enable them, then you got to do it if you want to be in the game.
That sounds like quite the roller coaster. Like going from like, you know, you're starting with this like two-sided marketplace thing that doesn't really work, and then you've got these like COVID bumps and stuff like that. That's nuts.
And the whole thing's been nuts. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think that's like the thing that's funny about building a company is like, I just start realizing and appreciating like other organizations around me that were really stable through change, because like our society is changing very rapidly. We live, I would say, in an internet society today, right? Like the memes and the culture online affects the in-person more than it ever has. Everyone has their own niche and their own things that they're into. And like, that's super exciting. But when I look at other organizations like managing through change, you realize like it's a lot of work. And you realize you can't get too, you have to balance like being extremely attached and caring a ton with also recognizing that there will always be problems. Like, and I think that's what I've come to terms with, is that there will just always be some shit that doesn't work the way you want. And that's the norm. And is the more you see that as the norm, the easier it is to manage it.
But I guess like you're like, when I look at Wistia, like there's quite a brand behind Wistia, like from my outside perspective. And I think that that seems to be somewhat on purpose on your part. And I guess there's this tension here between like business, like what you want to do with the business, like responding to COVID. You want to respond to like, you know, the cheaper video storage or whatever. And there's this thing of like, sometimes people will just go all in on the change and totally destroy their brand because they've pivoted too hard. Yeah. And then there's other people who will just stick with the brand and never like adjust at all. And like, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you think about that, like that balance between, you know, jumping on the new wave and how to keep that in tune with your brand and all of that.
Yes. Okay. Let me talk first about brand, and then we'll talk about managing through the change. So on the brand side, we figured out by accident that brand mattered, basically. We made some content that was mostly jokes for ourselves. Like, we had a team page back in the day. This is probably 2010, so 4 years after starting. 6 people on the team. And up until that point, we'd had 4 people on the team for 2 years. So it's two years, me and my co-founder, 2 years with 2 more people. And then now we just start hiring. We hired 2 more people. We felt really guilty because they weren't on the website. And the website was like designed to make us look like a B2B company. Like, it said management, and it showed the management, and it implied there were other employees and our credentials and blah, blah. And if you looked at it, like if you showed me this thing now, I'd be like, yeah, I know this. Obviously this is like 3 people. Like, but I thought at the time that we were looking like business, you know, like we're trying to be business. So anyway, it seemed like that team page did nothing for us. And we hired these 2 people. We felt really guilty because they couldn't, when their parents were like, where do you work? They're like, I work at this company. And they're like, oh, do you really? You know, what is that company? And so we took this photo of us standing in front of a whiteboard. That's how we kept it business, was us standing in front of a, because, you know, having a whiteboard is a big deal. We took 1 straight on photo, no smiles. And then the person who's taking the photo just had us do 2 goofy versions of it. And didn't really think much of it. And then my co-founder, Brendan, was like putting it on the website. And it happened to be someone on the team's birthday, this guy, Jeff. And he's like, you know, I'm going to give Jeff a gift for his birthday. I'm going to make it that if you type dance on this page, it automatically switches between the straight on photo and the like goofy ones. So it looks like everyone's dancing. I'll do it randomly. So he did that. And we added like girl talk music to it, which at the time like felt like you could do that. And we just like we tweeted it out because we're tweeting out everything, and normally no one responded to shit, you know, like deciding. And it went viral, and you know, it went viral on Twitter and it was on Reddit and the front page and all this stuff. And so it got all this traffic, which was a wild experience for that time, more traffic than we'd ever seen. But the funny thing was that 2 weeks later, we had a 2-week trial. 2 weeks later, we got more new customers than we had ever gotten.
Yeah.
And it was like, how could this be? You know, I've been trying to write blog posts that were like the top 10 reasons to use like a video hosting site and like, you know, stuff like that. And like, that wasn't working. And then like, here's this like team page that's so goofy and the least professional thing we've ever released. And it got us customers. And we're like, this is funny. Like, but we're business. Like, how could this be, you know? And then we did like another thing and it also worked, which was like a behind the scenes team video. And that gave us permission to try to have more fun in the marketing we're doing. And it just organically happened to a point where suddenly we saw the power of brand. We're like, wow, people, you have like, there's a bunch of people, they have to pick a video provider. You know, they want hosting with no ads. That basically is it. And a custom player.
Right.
Do you want to pick the one you like or the one you don't like? I mean, it seems so obvious on anything else. You want to pick things you like? And so it gave us this conviction to start investing in brand early. And and I think like brand does matter, and it even matters in B2B. And I think it's almost easier in B2B because like most people don't invest that much in it. So that's the first thing. That's my thing on brand. And then on like changing with brand, we've made this mistake. Like we've tried to go pivot too hard towards like the quote new thing. And the way I would describe it is like, I actually think the analogy of like, you want it, like, let's talk about getting in shape. So if you want to get in shape, everyone knows what to do. It's really easy. You got to eat well. You got to work out. You basically have to sleep enough. That's it. Like, that's the secret. I just told you the secret. You want shredded abs? That's it. You want to get huge. You want to get fast. Like, this is it. This is all it is. But eating well every day and like sleeping well every night and working out every day and knowing that it's not going to happen quickly, usually, that it's going to take a long time. It might take 2 years. It might take 4 years. Depending on what you're doing, it might take way longer. That's not very sexy, and that doesn't feel very fun, even though that's the answer. And I think in business, it's the same thing, which is like the secret to the long term is talk to customers, figure out what to give them things, and see if those things work. And you just go through this cycle. And what ends up happening is that it becomes sometimes the fad comes or the – and even if the fad is real, like AI, huge fad. And I personally think AI is real. I think it is here and it's here to change everything. If you put 100% towards just changing and being just an AI company, the problem is like if you haven't gone through the cycles to understand what customers actually want, you're going to get a bunch of people to come in and they're going to try your thing and they're like, this thing sucks. They're going to leave. And so the actual way to do it is to say like, all right, team, I think AI is here. We need to invest in this consistently and use it where it makes sense. We need to constantly be learning what are the best things we can provide to customers. And if AI helps us do that, fantastic. If it helps us do it faster, enables new things, great. And we just have to go through the cycle and we have to do we basically have to work out every day and we got to sleep right. And we got to eat right. And if we do that over time, we're going to be in a really solid place. And I think it's kind of like, you know, I know an entrepreneur who is so focused on shortcuts, he never does the right long-term thing.
Right.
And that's what happens. And it sucks because almost always the shortcuts don't work. They work if you get lucky, but like you don't really want to build a business just based on luck usually.
Yeah. And it feels like there needs to be like some sort of long living thing that people can hold on to that they can identify your brand as. So like for Wistia, it's like, yes, you're the video service, and I'm probably butchering it, but you know, and like AI is here. So they're going to, you know, include that as part of their offering because they're awesome people and they do a good job at what they do. Not they are now an AI company. Like you're still holding video as your primary thing.
Yes, we could decide to become an AI company and we're going to like, all right, we're going to do is try to train AI based on like the data we have or something. That would be a huge pivot. We should probably only do that huge pivot if everything else is screwed, you know? Or if it's so blindingly obvious that opportunity is much bigger, we're well positioned. There's a lot of reasons why you might do it.
Yeah.
But the problem with a lot of this stuff is it's not obvious where it's going to land. And I think it's actually, we're in a world where change is happening much faster. And it's really hard to know who the leading provider is of things.
Yeah.
I mean, even when ChatGPT launched, it was like, will anyone ever catch up to OpenAI with an LLM? And what we've seen is that, yes, like there's a lot of other LLMs. There's specialized LLMs. There's open source ones. You can run it on your own hardware. Like, it is not clear where it's going to end up. Now, if they raise a lot of money, they're doing a lot to allow companies to use their products like at OpenAI. Yes. And I think that's very smart for them. And that's great. But like that's the challenge in a really fast moving space. And so for an existing company, I think like figuring out how to play with these different things and learn from them. And you know, if you really should change what the business is, fantastic, change it. But doing it too fast and without doing the right long-term stuff is where that's where people are going to make mistakes or distract themselves or, you know, miss the bigger opportunity. Mm-hmm.
So I just want to pick up on something you mentioned a little while back about just the virality that you guys had early on. And I think that's really cool that you guys got to experience that as like a sign in the clouds almost of, hey, you know, you should be doing this, because I've experienced that too, where you do all of these, you know, top 10 and it doesn't work and whatever else.
Yeah.
And just to have that signal, I think is so like, that's such a gift that you guys got that. But I guess like when you think about, you've had a few kicks at that can now of, you know, branding and using that to your advantage. When you think of people, you know, spreading, like talking to their friends or talking within their organization about Wistia, do you think that they are talking about your product specifically, or they are talking more about the brand, as in like, are they talking about, hey, I like these guys, they're great, or are they talking about, hey, they've got this video editor and it's got all these features, or video service and all these features, you know, how do you think that kind of plays out?
I think the truth is it changes based on like what's happened in the last, like what you've experienced from Wistia in the last 6 months. I think sometimes it is specific product features that are like really driving a lot of value or saving a lot of time, and that is the reason to talk about it. I think sometimes it is just purely branded content. I think for a long time for us, we were able to go so hard on that and no one else was really doing it, that like, and even still, it's not a thing that happens that much, that like it was able to do things that we were able to do things that people had a very easy time talking about. And I think a lot of it's permission. Like, I think actually the reason to talk about things is, you know, it took me a while to figure this out. And I didn't come up with this. I can't remember where I read it, but it really resonated with me, which is like, people don't tell their friends about you because they like you. They tell their friends about you because they like their friend.
Yes.
And so it's like, they're sharing something because they're trying to help their friend. They're trying to give them something entertaining to watch. They're trying to help them do something sweet at work that's going to help them get better off. Like, they don't really care about the person who made the thing in the first place. It's about their friend. And I think that's like an important part of this, is like really thinking about it in that way. So it's like, if you're making content and you want to go viral, the thing that's going to go the most viral is the thing that is like most likely to have a predictable response from somebody else, right? So it's, if I give it to you, you're very likely to laugh. If I watch something like yesterday, I saw this ad, and it is for CeraVe. You know what that is? Like a moisturizer. And it's Michael and Michael Cera, and his name is spelled the same way. Is like, it's like the ad is like kind of meta, and it's like, it's funny, and it's him just like talking about how he's getting the moisture, whatever. The thing about it is the ad is legit funny and clever and so ridiculous that his last name is actually this, and that they've done this. And that's why it's going to get shared, is because it's the likelihood of laughing or getting a joyful moment out of it is high. And I think that's true with like on the B2C side, just like, and just you're with your friends, if it's about core emotions. I think that's also true with work. But at work, you also get these other options of like, this is going to help you. I really think this is going to help you grow, or I really think this is going to save you time, or I think this is going to help you get a promotion, or I think this is going to, you think it's going to help your friend do something that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise, then you're going to share it with them for sure. And so it's just about, back to like, how do you create things that people talk about? It's like,
yeah,
you just have to do those things. You have to do things that actually enable them to do shit they wouldn't do otherwise at work, and they can understand it. And it's like funny. If you put all that package together, it's going to have a much better shot of doing well.
Right. People care about people, and they're going to share things that are beneficial for them. That makes a lot of sense. And is there like, go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. I was going to say, that Sarah commercial was, I like ended up talking about it with my kids, 'cause he had that weird scene where he like touched his hand on the rock and he's like, I can even moisturize like this mountain. And it was just, but what reminded me and made me think about that too is, you know, you brought up a great example where it was sort of this intersection of that company, like this moisturizer, Michael Cera and his brand, because he's a total goofball weird kid that everyone loves, right? Yeah. And put all these things magically together. I see these like Venn diagram concentric circle right there.
Yeah.
And like what type, you know, you had a pretty well-known campaign, at least in my head, but the, I think it was the 110-100 series you did from a marketing campaign perspective. So wouldn't mind you talking a little bit about that and also how that, if that's how you see these sort of concentric circles of like brand, product, like all these things. Kind of so, bring that together.
Yeah. So 110-100 was a feature-length documentary we did. And we gave an LA production agency, Sandwich Video. They do a lot of, they did a lot of the launch videos for Slack, Warby Parker, like so many things. And their launch videos are often like really funny and clever. We gave them $111,000, and then they made three ads for us. They made us an ad with a $1,000 budget. They made us an ad with a $10,000 budget, and they made an ad with a $100,000 budget. And then we documented their creative process and the difference between those budgets. So if you watch the documentary, you get to see that actually like the $1,000 budget, you can, it's almost easier to be more creative because like you have less at stake. You can change things more rapidly. You're forced to be really creative. The $10,000 one looks really great, but it takes a lot of prep. And the $100,000 one looks incredible. And they have, you know, and there's all these layers to the ads of like, you know, they can't use actors at the beginning. They end up hiring actors that look like their employees for the $100,000 one. Yeah. And it's like, they're like better looking versions of all of them. It's so funny. and so we, this is a good example of like, so why do we do that? So how do you get the different concentric circles to like do that? Video, you know, Wistia at that point was known as like, hey, we're experts at teaching you how video works. So like, it makes sense for us to teach you about this stuff, about the budgets, the creativity, all that. The ads were for our product Soapbox, which is a video creation tool. And it was new. So having ads and having like some hype around it, that was good. So check, like, this is a good thing. Then there was like the ads themselves that Sandwich would make. We had never worked with a production company like Sandwich. They were going to make this for us, which is going to be really cool to see someone else make our ads. They go really high budget. So it's also going to elevate it and make the thing feel like the ads themselves and using them is going to be good for us, right? Then if you watch the documentary, the only way to understand it is to understand the product. So like if you watch the documentary, you know what Soapbox is and you know what Wistia is. You have a sense of our brand, our creativeness, and like all this kind of stuff. And then there's like the brand values throughout. So it's like the meta-ness of the whole thing of like you're watching an hour and 30 minute long thing. It's funny. It's engaging. It's clever. It's about video. That attaches to Wistia brand. And finally, we made a trailer for the movie, as you would. And we promote the trailer. And the trailer is an ad to the whole thing. So it's like this SaaS company made a movie. So if you want to stand out and be like a different type of SaaS company, making a movie is a way to do that. Like, and that's still true today. Most SaaS companies are not making movies, right? So there was like seven different ways for us to win on this thing. And the way we looked at it is we talk about it as like layering risk. And actually, it's really beneficial for us to layer all these risks on because we basically said, actually, the one I didn't say is learning and development. This production team was going to go and follow Sandwich. And we figured the worst case scenario was at least they would learn from them. So we had all these different layers, and we thought if we get like three of these to work, this is probably a net positive. But what happened in that case is it was like basically everything worked. Like everything worked way better than we ever thought it would, which is incredible. Like the ads worked. They built the brand connection. There was more time spent with the Wistia brand in the 2 months that from when 110-100 came out. Like, and when I say time spent with the brand, I mean people watching the documentary. So more overall time spent with the Wistia brand in those 2 months than the previous year across every single other marketing activity we did. Like we added it up to know the difference.
Right.
And so we saw a huge spike in direct traffic and we saw a huge spike in people searching for Wistia. It turns out direct traffic and searching for Wistia converts best for us because it's like word of mouth. So we saw a huge spike in customers that drove a ton of growth and it still does. It still gets watched. It still drives growth. Like it's an evergreen thing. And so it was like a natural evolution of all of those, of the stuff we were talking about before. Like it was just this understanding that that the brand values matter, that time with brand matters, that being creative matters, that being different matters, and giving ourselves permission to do it. And Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of how it worked and how it happened. And I guess the last thing I would say is that it was, in terms of like the, I'm just thinking about the CeraVe thing and Michael Cera, but like it was like an opportunity that existed because Adam Lizagor from Sandwich, he and I were chatting and he came to our conference. And while he was on stage, I said to him, like, hey, I want to ask you to make a video for us like 5 years ago. And I looked it up and you said it was 17 grand to make a video. Will you still honor that price? And he was like, no, but I will do it for free. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is incredible. So then after, I'm like, can we do that free video? And he was like, no, I can't do it for free. I was kind of like, I just kind of couldn't control myself. I was on stage. He's like, but let's do something together. And that's where it was like born out of. And so it was cool to like the serendipity of it and everyone being open to take a risk and all the stuff.
Have you thought about running it back now? Like revisiting? Because that, you know, gears changed, tech has changed. Like that was,
it's funny you say that, because
5 years ago or so?
We have just been talking about that. Someone asked me about that like yesterday. Was like, will we do 1x100 again and do it another way? And it like, I wouldn't be surprised if we do. We have another series that's like different but the same called Fix My Setup right now, which is like very, very different. It's like the first season is 6 1-minute episodes. The second season will be coming out soon. There's been a huge amount of demand for it. And yeah, I think it's, that's one, another, actually a lesson that I've learned in all of this is like, when you do have something that's really working, asking yourself too, even on the brand side, what's the way that we can go bigger or do it again and keep enough of it the same that we broke through on and change enough of it that it's like still unique and fresh. Because I think that's also like, if you're doing a lot of branded things, it's very easy to feel like you always have to go 0 to 1. But sometimes actually, you did go 0 to 1. You should go 1 to 2 or 3 to 5. You know,
right?
Yeah. Huh. I still remember that. Wait, I didn't remember the 1x100, but when you explained the movie, I totally knew what you're talking about. That was great.
It was so cool. I mean, it's amazing how much it comes up for something that we did in like 2018 or something, 2017. So yeah, it comes up a lot. And I mean, someone's just showing me the data. It's like people are still watching this all the time, getting us customers all the time. It's like kind of crazy. It's the power of evergreen stuff.
Yeah, but there's still value there though. I think that's a big part that maybe you skipped over in your explanation that you got earlier, was like that it's valuable for people to watch that, like even just as education.
Yes.
Right? Like of what is the difference here? And like, that's the value I remember from that.
Yeah. And I think that's, you're exactly right. And I think it's a mix of those things. It's like actually teaching someone something or educating in some way and actually making it entertaining.
Yeah.
If you can do that, you're in good shape.
Yeah. Speaking of entertaining, the way I know you is from your Talking Too Loud podcast. Could you tell us? Yeah. Yeah. I listen to it almost every week. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what the podcast is, what you guys do over there.
Yeah. So the podcast is called Talking Too Loud because, as you've seen through this interview, when I get excited, I cannot control the volume of my voice. I do it with this woman, Sylvie Lubau, who is our producer and kind of my co-host on the show. And we interview guests about like entrepreneurship and marketing and product predominantly. We cover other topics too. And we were looking for a vehicle that was really aligned to me because like I had done before this, I did a show called Brandwagon, and Brandwagon was like a late night style show with like segments and in-person guest interviews. And we were building a car and it was incredible, but it was also way too much. It was like, we signed on for way too much. And as a part of it, we had these like full length interviews I did with folks, and we released that as a podcast, and it was the easiest thing we did. It was almost like, it just like, oh, we have it, just put it out there and see what happens. And there was a lot of really good response to the podcast and also the podcast was, I was just talking to people about brand, which I care a lot about, as we're talking about here, but I had this feeling like I'm talking to like billionaires. And I'm talking to these incredible entrepreneurs, and there's other questions I want to ask them. I felt that I couldn't on the show. And so we were like, how can we find something so that if you come and you actually like the types of things I like, which is like scaling companies and these, mm-hmm. you know, and entrepreneurship all the way through, and just my bent towards these things. If you like these things, you can come along on the ride with me and kind of be brought into the conversations that I have with folks. And so that's what we set out to do. And then the other thing we set out with it was we said, look, we need to make sure that we do enough episodes. And we are not going to judge this on the first 5 or the first 10 or even the first 20.
Yeah,
we're going to do enough. And so we need a vehicle and approach that's like actually going to be fun to do. And so I'm really happy and proud that we've ended up there. Like, I love doing the podcast. It's so fun. I learn stuff on it all the time. That's what probably people don't realize enough is I'll ask a question from some guest. And then like 6 months later, Wistia has done something. And it's like came from that interview.
Yeah.
So I think we've done 80 episodes or so, doing really well. And it's been really fun to do. So yeah, that's what the podcast is.
Nice. Well, I hope you guys make it to 100. We just crossed 100 last episode. So, you know,
you guys did. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
This is 101. Yeah,
we'll definitely get there.
Okay. Yeah. I think you'll be able to probably see within 6 months too, effects of these conversations too. It's sort of also why we bring guests on. We're always talking with each other about how things go. We have I don't know if our rapport is as good as you and Sylvie's, but you guys are hilarious together. So it's definitely entertaining to listen to and as well. So, but you know, we talked about a lot of these little marketing campaigns you've done, like whether you know the business word is like marketing campaigns, but you seem to be having a ton of fun with whatever you're doing, right? So whether it's the 110-100, whether it's the Talking Too Loud podcast, all of those types of things. And it looks like a lot of these have paid off as what some would consider like a bold bet. But I don't know. I'm wondering about other sort of bold bets. Maybe more shifting on the product side since we've talked a lot about brand and marketing. But yeah. What sort of other bets have paid off for you all with Wistia?
Have paid off? Oh, I thought you were going to ask me the other question. What hasn't paid off?
We'll get there too. That'll be fun as well.
That's what I was ready for. Honestly, I mean, a lot. The things I actually almost want to start the other way, which is like the things that haven't paid off are
sure. Yeah, go for it.
Like when I talk about these like hard won lessons of like, hey, you know what to do, you have to do it over a long time. It often doesn't feel sexy in the moment. You just got to do it. Like we've made the mistake at times of pivoting too hard. Like we've taken too many of our product resources and pivoted them to some new thing, and actually, we underestimated that, like, yes, we should have done the new thing, but instead of taking like 70% of the resources, we should have taken 20, and we should have kept that delta of 50. We should have kept that delta, just continuing to make the core better, faster,
iterative on that side.
Iterative. Yeah. Right. And I think that like it is that's probably been one of the biggest mistakes I've made has been like pivoting too hard a couple times, and then overthinking it. So soapboxes is a good example here where I know you didn't ask this question, but I feel like this is like the most interesting answer is like, so soapbox, we made soapbox. I believe it was 2016 when it launched. It was a Chrome extension, allows you to record your webcam and your screen simultaneously. And very fast, quick, easy to use. We had a ton of growth with soapbox. It grew very fast. But we set up an expectation that was too high for it. So we had a year where I think the first launched in June. I think by the end of the year, it was 10,000 a month in MRR. And we said, okay, this is fine, this new thing. Our goal for this year is to go from 10,000 in MRR to 100,000 by the end of the year. And we hit, I think, 45,000. And we were all like, we suck. We're the worst. And then when you looked at like a resource perspective, there was a product team on Soapbox. And there was like two product teams on Wistia. Wistia was doing maybe 25 million in revenue. And Soapbox is doing 40,000 a month, so half a million. And all these questions, what should we do? How should we divide our resources? And it's like this very, very hard decision. And we tried to get our resource right. Then we took resources off Soapbox. So we put resources back on Soapbox. And we couldn't get the balance right. And like we had just expectations that were too high. And actually, the biggest mistake we made was that we overthought it in the first place that it should be a separate product. And we actually first built the first version of like screen recording into Wistia. And then people started using it instantly. And we're like, they love it. We should make it its own thing. So we make it its own thing. And I remember the conversations like, we're going to be a multi-product company. That's going to be how we scale. And I remember, I built a multi-product company. Oh my God, I'm so good at this. Like, this is so sick. We're going to have lines of business. We're going to have general managers. And we were like, almost like playing business is like how I would describe it. And even doing that, Soapbox actually grew very quickly. But the incentive structures and the way that we set it up were not done in the right way to let us like actually invest in it iteratively, which is what we should have done. And so that was rough for me because, like, you know, when COVID hit, huge, huge amount of usage on Soapbox, blah, blah, blah. There was not a single person working on it the day COVID hit. And it had been growing with nobody on it. And my lesson from that was like, if you actually looked at the product usage data, it was getting a lot of usage. The problem was it was separate from Wistia. And we thought that we should have had like these discrete products, and actually we should have just built it all in one in the first place, which is how we first did it until we overthought it. Going to things that worked, I can point to a lot of things like that worked incredibly well. You know, we built channels, which was like a Netflix-like experience on your site. 1-to-100 was in channels. So if you wanted, you know, if you came and saw 1-to-100, you watched in this thing that looked really beautiful, like video gallery. And a lot of people saw that and they wanted it just because of the gallery, right?
Right.
And we've built a lot of features over the years that have had a lot of adoption. And in the last few years, basically because of the change I was telling you about with people seeing their computers as a camera, we dramatically expanded the footprint of the product to go from it being hosting and analytics and management and like publishing to actually adding, you know, the new version of Soapboxes in Wistia today. It's just called Wistia Record. But by the power of doing that, you get all the Wistia analytics, you get all the organization, you get the permissions, you get the tie-ins with marketing automation, and then we built an editor, and the editor, you can edit by editing via text and all that, and all this new stuff we're doing. Our webinar platform, it's kind of insane how much we've bitten off in the last few years. And the lesson was we've learned along the way. We're like, all right, we're going to build these discrete new products, but they're going to be in one core thing. And we are going to plan that we stay on it and iterate. Just like we're going to do 100 episodes. We're not going to whiplash investment. We're only going to do it if we can keep the investment on it. And now when I look at the data, it's like, They're all growing very fast, like month over month growth rates that are less like look like an early stage startup. But they're in every case, like with the editor and with recording and with Wistia Live, like none of them was like there hasn't been one silver bullet that I've seen. There hasn't been one time where like, oh, we launched this thing and now growth just suddenly changed. It's been constant iteration on all of these things, and it's been putting in the holistic platform.
Yeah, that's amazing. And now that I think about it, I just keep like in my brain, I just keep hearing these lessons resonate, which is like the market is going to win. Like whatever the market is, and you've talked about it in yeah. various parts of this episode, just like the market doesn't necessarily move fast. If it's like if you're already aligned with the market, freaking stay aligned with the market. You can create these little offshoots or small bets that are iterative off of it. You know, maybe they're further out, but still keep them attached, right? Like stay yeah, in your even, core. If you found that, stick with it, man.
The only thing I would say is like people, what I didn't understand is having a separate product and looking at it as like having a separate customer, separate billing, separate user management, separate sales, separate everything. It is a big task. Now it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Sometimes that's what you have to do. Like, in the market you're in, that may be, it all comes back to like listening really hard to what customers say.
Sure. Right.
That may be exactly what customers need, is these separate, discrete tools. And that's great. I think what happened to us is that in our market, what we saw was that like a lot of the feature requests in Soapbox were all stuff that people had in Wistia. And then people in Wistia would be like, why isn't Soapbox in here? I don't get it. Like, what are you guys doing? And our own perception in this brand we've built and what the product delivers on and stuff, we made it actually harder on ourselves. And so that's, I think, like, and even the lesson with Soapbox, if I hadn't separated the teams as much, we could have just been more iterative and pulled it iterative rather and pulled it in earlier, I think. It was that we created these hard lines and we thought too much about changing the structure of the business as a part of it. And I'm thankful that we didn't screw it all up. Like, the truth is all these things worked. So, like, even Soapbox, still working, still being used. It was just like, when you go back to, like, what's the right long-term thing? Like, what's the thing that's going to make the most sense, like, 4 years from now, 8 years from now? It makes the most sense to, like, basically tie it in. That's going to be parts of it that they're going to be confusing, like business model. How do you get the business model right in an all-in-one is very confusing. But we believed that, like, the user experience, if it would be that much better, it'd be worth it to do it that way.
Right.
No, it's amazing. Yeah, but we kind of start to wrap up a little here. There's just so much to unpack here that you've already covered for us. But you're a person that I feel like is continuously learning, right? You talk about kind of the residual benefits of the of your podcast. And I mean, I've heard some of your speeches or I guess talking points in past recordings you've had. I remember this one about, like, it's either the mountain climber guy,
Ed Visters,
you're talking about building teams and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, but how do you stay fresh? Like, how do you keep challenging yourself in terms of learning? Cause it's easy with all the success you've had to kind of, for someone to sort of check out, you know, sort of just being like, okay, cool. I've made my nut. I've hit I've got my success. Like, what kind of keeps you learning and keeps you on your feet with all this?
I think for me, I love working on hard problems with, like, smart people that have, like, a great vibe that, like, you want to be together, like, you want to work together. You know, I look at culture as, like, the work, and the work should actually be fun and engaging and like intellectually stimulating. And if you're in big markets or you go have big goals, like, that usually stays true. So the way you screw it up is actually the team, is if you hire the wrong people and you don't, like, if you don't value the trust, you know, I think that's, like, there's been times when the senior management team at Wistia was incredibly strong. There's been times when it wasn't as strong. And I could tell you, the times I wasn't as strong, those are the times that I would, like, feel this, like, is this actually what I want to do? Like, this, like, mm-hmm. you know, and I listened to that, fortunately, and adjusted and got to a place like, oh, it is about, I don't know, like, you think sometimes an entrepreneur, like, there's some specific way you're supposed to play the game, or you get to a certain size, it's not fun anymore. Like, that, people used to tell me that all the time. Like, well, it's so fun at the beginning, but it sucks later, right? Like, And, like, actually, like, for me, it's honestly more fun than it's been, but it comes down to a mix of, like, I find it fun to make progress. So if we're not making progress, it's not fun. But if we are making progress, it's fun. I like learning. I like working with really smart people who know more than me. I like going into places where it's, like, a little bit uncharted. Like, no one really knows how it's going to shake out. And if I was, like, if we were to sell the company and I wasn't doing this job, I know I would miss it. Like, I know I would miss this part. And I think, but saying all of that, like, I also have learned over the years that, like, you know, the oxygen mask thing on an airplane, you're supposed to put the oxygen mask on your kid before, right. Or on yourself rather before you put on your kid. And until I was a parent, I didn't understand that, because it's like, you'd think the kid's the riskier person. Like, you should put the mask on them and then put it on yourself. But obviously the reason you put it on yourself is, if you can't get oxygen, you can't put it on them. They can't do it. They're screwed. You have to take care of yourself. I don't think I really understood for a long time that, like, as an entrepreneur, you have to actually take care of yourself first. And for me, that means, like, the long-term things I was talking about, which is, like, I try to sleep well. I try to work out every day. I try to eat right. Go through periods of, like, doing a lot more meditation or less. Like, I try to spend a lot of time with my family. I try to spend time with friends. I try to have a joyful life and, like, a nourished life. And if I have those things, I come into work like way more ready to go, like much more excited to tackle hard problems, more present, I think, in the meetings and conversations and decisions I need to be in. And if I were to sacrifice, a lot of those things take time, you know? And I think early days, I thought I didn't have time to work out and I gained a bunch of weight. And I wanted to work out, but I just thought it was irresponsible for me to work out. That's what I thought. And I think it was like, you know, it's like every president, every U.S. president is like always like a jogger or a biker, maybe except for Trump. Like, but like, you know, how do they fit the time in? And it's like, the way you fit the time is you have strong teams around you and you delegate things and you set the right types of goals and you have, suddenly you do have time. You should have time. And then what everyone should want is for you to be your best when you come in and set that example. And so I think if I hadn't figured that stuff out of my life, I don't think I would come to work as excited and ready to learn and everything else. But because I have, I love it. And so, yeah, I'm like very drawn to all the stuff we're talking, all the uncertainty, all the change. What will AI change? Like, it doesn't scare me. It makes me usually excited. And I think that is maybe just my head and how I think. I don't know, but I do think that I need that balance, at least for me in my life. That's what I need.
Wow. No, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, again, thank you so much for coming on. If you haven't already picked up on, you know, Chris has tons of stuff to share. I mean, if you, like I do, I go through his blog posts, and anytime sometimes I'm stuck with a certain problem, I might Google search you to see, like, has he said anything about this? Honestly, there's been enough things over the years that, like,
you could just email me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know that.
True.
Yeah.
So, but thank you so much. Yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. This is great. And, yeah, I don't know, this is a delight. Hope we can do it again sometime.
Cool.
Sure.
All right. Have a good one. See you later, Nick.
Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.